Tonight, honestly, I'm probably going to really talk about one verse. I'm going to read an entire chapter. But I'm really going to talk about one verse as we transition in John from the book of works or the book of signs to the book of glory. And we're going to switch over as Jesus switches his ministry. We're going to kind of shift our focus as well as we read through the text. And of course, John chapter 13, we typically know well as the foot washing chapter. It's where we always go as Pentecostals, as Church of God believers that believe in washing of the saints' feet. That's where you go for that proof text. But tonight I'm really just going to do verse 1. So let's stand and read 13:1. Then I'm going to go back and read all of chapter 12 to kind of bring us to this point. And then we'll spend a little bit of time talking about this verse. John chapter 13, verse 1 says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end." I'm going to go back and read all of chapter 12 because we've kind of pieced it together a little bit. We've been there, I feel like, for probably a couple of months now where we've kind of been in and out. And in fact, I believe it was maybe last week or it might have been the week before, I really centered on verse 42 and 43. "Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, because they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God." So that was the last place we really centered. But when you go back to the beginning of chapter 12, we see that it really ties in with what it's saying in chapter 13. Now, before the feast of the Passover, the very first verse in chapter 12 is when Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany. So these chapters are not disconnected. They are in the same time frame. They're the same setting. They're the same group of people that we're talking about. And he was in Bethany where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. So we get the tie also back with chapter 11. And to me, you know, that's important that we understand that so many times we'll take one verse or we'll try to take one passage or one chapter and we'll try to pull it out and make it into something. But the reality is when you really get into Bible study, now I'm not talking about reading. You can get up and I'm just going to be truthful with you. You can get up and you can read 3 or 4 chapters in the morning, about 10, 15 minutes, and be absolutely mindless, sipping your coffee, worried about your day. You're ingesting words, but you're not ingesting what Christ is saying, right? So, and we're all guilty. I'm not pointing fingers at that. I'm just telling you that's a fact. You can sit down and you read, and that's why when you read something for the 15th time, something finally jumps out at you. Because that 15th time, you're finally paying attention. Or maybe it's, you know, you've seen 14 other things and God's just showing you something different. But it's easy to just kind of zone out. But when you get into Bible study, you see everything is connected. Particularly when you get within a book, right? So sometimes it's hard to maybe connect the dot from John back to Matthew or to Mark or to Luke. But when you're reading John, there is an entire story that starts at the beginning and ends at the end. And it's this line that is woven throughout that takes you through a complete story. So when you try to take one piece of it out, you're getting one piece of the story, but you're not getting the entirety of what's being said. John chapter 12 is not disconnected from 11 because we have Lazarus who was dead. And in John chapter 11, that's where you get that story. He's been dead for 4 days. He stinks. He said, "Take the stone away anyway." And he did. And he said, "Lazarus, come forth." And Lazarus was raised from the dead because he is the resurrection and the life. You have 6 days before Passover. We read chapter 13. It's before the Passover. There's no disconnect, folks. It's all one connected to the other. Let me go back. Let me just read. And we'll try to get to John chapter 13 tonight, verse 1. I know I'm terrible for that, but when Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany where Lazarus was which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. They made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Some of y'all may remember I talked about letting your worship or your aroma fill the room. And sorry I had to do that. My old eyes, I have to have light to be able to read. You know, we spend a week or maybe even 2 weeks on that about letting your aroma fill the place. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and had the bag, and bare what was put therein. And then said Jesus, let her alone, against the day of my burying hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with you, but me you have not always. Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. How many of you know when Jesus does something miraculous in your life, people will come to see you, not Jesus, but you can be the one that points them into the right direction. You can be the one that bears forth the testimony, the witness, and that's okay. I know we live in this sense of false humility. Oh, it's not me, it's all God. No, your obedience brings you to places sometimes, right? And sometimes you need to be able to pass that along as you point them to Jesus. You don't take the credit for it, right? But you can't just say, oh, it's all God, and send them away. You got to say, no, I was obedient. I cried. I prayed. I read. I did all the things that God requires of me. That's why I'm in the place that I am. But let me tell you, if you will do these same things, that same Jesus that done this for me can do it for you. See, there's a right way and a wrong way to go about things. And I believe that when people came, all of them, save for Judas Iscariot, when they came to see Lazarus, I believe Lazarus, I just lived for Jesus. I was obedient. I did what I was supposed to do, and I still died. How's that for a testimony? But Jesus showed up, and he called me out of the grave back into the glorious light. So now, because I lived the way I was supposed to, he came and visited me, and he brought me from death to life. How does that sound like our testimony? You know, I was dead, but now I'm alive. I was blind, but now I see. I was out in sin, but now I have life. I used to be a drunkard. I used to go out and run around in the world. I used to do all of these other things. I was dead, but now I see. And I continue to see because I have stayed on the path that I'm supposed to stay on. All right, I got to keep reading. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death. When your testimony gets the eye off of, I'll use me and Stanley. I think Stanley's all right with this. I think he knows what I'm getting at and that I'm not just picking on him. When your testimony takes the eye off of the preacher or the praise and worship leader, they don't like it and they want you to sit down and shut up. Not here, I hope, right? But when what you're doing and what you're saying takes your eyes off of me or off of Stanley, we don't like it. That's what's going on here. They didn't like that what Jesus had done had taken the eyes off of their tradition, off of what they had been doing time after time. They didn't like it. So they were wanting to kill, not Jesus, but they were wanting to kill the messenger. They were wanting to kill the one with the testimony so the eyes could go back onto them. Because of that reason, because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. They took their sight and put it on something else. On the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. And Jesus, when he had found a young ass, set thereon, as it is written, Fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, thy king cometh, sitting on an ass's colt. These things understood not his disciples at the first, but when Jesus was glorified, then remembered they that these things were written of him, and that they had done these things unto him. The people, therefore, that was with him, when he called Lazarus out of his grave and raised him from the dead, bear record. Sometimes you need some people to bear some record for you. Not everybody's going to believe you, but they might believe your buddy when they tell the same story. For this cause, the people also met him, for that they had heard that he had done this miracle. The Pharisees, therefore, said among themselves, "Perceive ye how ye prevail nothing? Behold, the world is gone after him." Well, don't you wish that was really true? That the world would just chase after Jesus? It all depends on your point of view. And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. Same came therefore to Philip, which was out of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. And Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it. He that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name." How many of you will honestly look at people and say, "I'm here for this hour. God sent me"? Really, all of you should be able to. If you are here, if you feel like you belong here, you shouldn't say, "Well, whatever." No, you should say, "God sent me here for this purpose." There's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with being biblical in what you recognize and what you do. To recognize what God has called you for only brings glory to His name. It only honors Him. You may not like what you have to do. Jesus didn't like it. It said right there, "My soul is troubled. What shall I say? Save me from this hour." Does that sound like someone that's really happy and excited to be getting ready to die? But nevertheless, he wanted to glorify the Father. And he said, "God has sent me here to do this." Then came there a voice from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." The people therefore that stood by and heard it said that it thundered. Others said an angel spake to him. Jesus answered and said, "This voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." This he said, signifying by what death he should die. People answered him, We have heard out of the law that Christ abideth forever. How sayest thou, the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man?" And Jesus said unto them, "Yea, a little while is the light with you. Walk while you have light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not whither he goeth. While you have light, believe in the light, that you may be children of the light." These things spake Jesus and departed, and did hide himself from them. But though he had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him, that the saying of Esaias the prophet might be fulfilled, which he spake, "Lord, who hath believed our report, and to whom hath the arm of the Lord been revealed?" Therefore they could not believe, because that Esaias said again, "He hath blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, that they should not see with their eyes, nor understand with their heart, and be converted, and I should heal them." These things said Esaias when he saw his glory and spake of him. Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. Jesus cried and said, "He that believeth on me believeth not on me, but on him that sent me. And he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. If any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not. For I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. Doesn't that echo back of John 3:17? He that rejecteth me and receiveth not my words hath one that judgeth him. The word that I have spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day. For I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me. He gave me a commandment which I should say and what I should speak. And I know that this commandment is life everlasting. Whatsoever I speak, therefore, even as the Father saith unto me, so I speak. The light is extinguished at John chapter 12. If you'll go and you'll read through the rest of John, you don't see light. Light is pretty exclusive to while Jesus is working. Matter of fact, right up until the very end, I am come a light into the world. Whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. You know, Jesus has some pretty straightforward words. He doesn't mince words. But Jesus is also very full of mercy and grace and compassion and love. Now I say that because all of John chapter 12 is about those that are rejecting him. Even though they've seen Lazarus raised from the dead, even though they know what the prophet Isaiah has to say, they know the word, they've lived out the law, but they're still afraid to confess. They're rejecting Jesus. So we have this repeated theme of even though they've seen everything that Jesus has ever done, they reject him. And given all of that, as Jesus transitions from the book of signs, the book of miracles, to the book of glory, he's getting ready to transition, and he's already told those closest to him that the time is now. Even in that same very week, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, right, tied directly in with his direct words, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father. Now, all of that's pretty straightforward. We get that. We know that Jesus has said, I've done all I can do on earth. People that are going to believe are going to believe. It's time for me to go do something different. It's time for me to return home. But what he says next just throws me for a loop every time I read it. It doesn't say that he loved his own, which were his inner circle. It doesn't say he loved Peter, James, and John, and Matthew, and Andrew, and all of the others. Over and over, we see the world as the ones that have rejected Jesus Christ. We see the world as the ones that are at odds with Christ. And yet, here is Jesus that is clearly stated as having loved his own which were in the world. It's exactly what the text says, and it means exactly what it says. He loved everyone that tried to kill him. He loved everyone that tried to tear down his ministry. He loved everyone that tried to tear down 3,000-4,000 years of his Father's work. He loved the ones that took up the stones. He loved Judas that was robbing from the church treasury. The world, not the church. Now, I know he loves the church. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Jesus loves every one of us in here. But I want you to understand that even if you got things that you try to hide and you try to keep tucked away that no one finds out, even if you're not really saved, you're just coming to church to sit with husband or wife or mom or dad or grandma or grandpa, Jesus loves you. It is stated unequivocally in plain black and white that having loved his own which were in the world, while all of that was going on, he loved them. But not just that. It says he loved them unto the end. Now, when we talk end, if we start here and we number the rocks that way, they end over there, right? Last in order. We've got in theology, we've got a branch of theology, which is just the study of God, called eschatology, which is the study of end times. Eschatos is where that word comes from. It means last or end or the end cap in numerically speaking. Well, in English, that's really all we understand is end. When we talk about the end, it's last. There is nothing else to be done, right? That's not what this is saying at all. That has zero use here. Because in Greek, there's two words for end. One is eschatos, which is last numerically, last in line, last in order. But then there's another word for end called telos, which means to complete, which means to bring to fruition a work. Or in that song, and I had to take a picture so I remembered it, as he sends forth his love to make you whole. So when we read this verse, even when we read it in context, unless you really start digging in, you're reading it and you're saying, well, Jesus is at the end of his life. And he's going to the, you know, he's going away and the love is done because it's ended. He loved him to the very end, but now we're transitioning and so the end is over. No. That's not what this is saying at all, and that we could get this deep down into our spirit to understand the depth of what Jesus is doing, not just in the foot washing when we move on a little bit, but in all that's being said up to this point. Jesus quit doing the signs and the miracles and the wonders simply so he could go and die to make a complete way for every sinner, for every reject, for every ill-mannered person, for every person that rejected God, so he could go and make a complete and whole way for them to be able to go to the cross. He didn't love them until the end, as in last numerically. He loved them to make them a complete way to be reconciled to God the Father. Doesn't that change how we look at things a little bit? Even knowing what he was getting ready to face, because I just read you his prayer. If I can, I don't want to face this hour, but nevertheless, let me glorify you. And the only way that I'm going to glorify you is if I kill myself so that someone else can live. And maybe that's a harsh way of words, but the reality is he could have come down off of the cross. He had to completely kill the flesh of which he was born into to make a complete reconciliation for your flesh to God. And he did it more for the sinner than for the saint. Isn't that something? You know, those that are not sick have no need of a physician. And if, you know, I read out of Hebrews, if we keep trampling the blood of Christ underfoot, there comes a point when there's no more blood of Christ for us. That's my hillbilly translation. But even in that, remember I told you he still gives hope? Here, for the entirety of the world, the cosmos, everything. He didn't love them until a certain point. He loved them completely, totally, wholly, wholly, not to make a partial reconciliation to God, but a complete reconciliation to God. That should color everything that we do here, everything that we do in our life outside of here. It should color everything we do ministry-wise. Every song that you sing should be to point people to that kind of love of God. Every word that I preach should be to point people to that kind of love of God. Every time y'all open the doors for Celebrate Recovery. It's to point someone to that kind of love of God. Jody, every time you preach, it's to point people to that kind of love of God. That it doesn't matter what situation they're in, what light and life they're in, how bad they have messed up, God already knew it and sent His Son, who willingly went to the cross to love to the completion of all that He was sent to do. I'm not going to go beyond that verse tonight. We're just a little short, so we've got time for questions or discussion. If you want, I'd be glad to do that.